This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding two fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Venerable. Would you like to start a talk?
Well, if I'm honest, yeah, not really. but I will anyway. I was thinking maybe we can just sit here and meditate instead of a talk. But maybe people are expecting a talk, so I will give a little talk. I don't mind. But I'm always trying to be honest. So if you ask me, would you like to give a talk now? And yeah, no, the answer would be, honestly, would be no. But I enjoy either way, because sometimes in life you have to do things you don't want to do. And sometimes you don't want to give a talk and you just want to meditate. But that's only a small thing, of course. But sometimes you have to do other things in life that you don't want to do. And sometimes what you don't want to do is meditation. And instead, you want to give a talk or whatever else you want to do. So sometimes you don't feel like meditating, maybe. And today I thought I would talk a little bit about that. Because usually in these meditation groups that we teach, we talk about methods for meditation, how to meditate, what to do and what not to do when meditating. But I thought maybe it's nice to talk today not about methods, because you've learned so many methods already, and I've already, just me alone, have given you so many methods already in the past, and let alone all the other people that you have taught you meditation. So today, instead of methods and how to meditate, maybe I talk a little bit about our attitude towards meditation, how we think about and how we relate towards meditation in a more general sense, rather than what we do while meditating, what do we think about meditation. And I would like to talk about this because that is what I've sort of been reflecting on myself lately, and in these kind of talks I always like to bring up things that are relevant in my own practice and my own life, and it makes it a bit more lively, these talks, I hope, anyway. Lately I've been sort of reflecting, how do I relate to meditation, and how have I related to it in the past? And I think this will be useful to talk about, because the way you reflect and think about meditation has echoes inside of the meditation itself. It influences the meditation. If you have a negative attitude towards meditation, for example, then you will also bring that negative attitude into your meditation, and your meditation won't be as nice. Or if you have a demanding attitude towards your meditation, like you want to get certain things out of it, then also that is like a desire that you take into your meditation, and that will also make the meditation much more uncomfortable than it needs to be. So therefore I think it's helpful for you all to reflect upon how you relate to meditation. And there are a million and one ways that we can relate to things in life and also to meditation. So this little talk that I give you now only can scratch a little bit of the surface. But maybe just that reflection alone, for you to just think about the way you relate to meditation, is something that maybe you haven't really thought about before or heard of before. So if I just tell you that to keep an eye out on your mind before you meditate, or your general mindset about meditation, and just look at what that is like. Maybe that can already help you, because you're very creative and skillful people. You can usually figure out your own things. You don't need someone like me to tell you. But there is a couple of attitudes that I have seen in my own life and in the life of others that are sort of common towards meditation, and that actually can have a negative impact on the meditation. So I'll just pick a few of those, and some of them might be relatable to you and others might not. So one way we can relate to our meditation is as something we avoid doing sometimes, or that we don't really like. Because sometimes I don't know about you, but in my past life, especially as a lay person, I had like these periods. Sometimes I was really interested in meditation and I did it a lot, and then for a long time I just kept avoiding it and didn't really do it. And why is that the case? Why was that the case for me anyway? It's sometimes, that can be a million and one reasons for this, but sometimes we think we don't make meditation important enough. There's lots of things all of you have to do in your life, I'm sure. You either have work or children or other responsibilities, and these are all important, but sometimes we place too little importance on meditation, and we think, You don't even need to think all these things out loud, but it can be like a subtle, like background attitude in the mind. We think of meditation like you're just sitting there and doing nothing. What kind of benefit can that be? So I will just not do it because I've got more important things to do. Luckily, all of you today, who I can see on the webcam, did not have that attitude today, because otherwise you wouldn't be here. So maybe this is not the right thing for you to hear, but maybe in the future this will be relevant. So instead of thinking of meditation as something that doesn't benefit us, we can actually actively recollect the benefits that we have gotten in the past. Like, how peaceful were you in the past with meditation? What have you learned about yourself? And also, where can it bring you still? You probably have a certain sense of how much deeper meditation can go, either from your own experience or what other people, like the monks and the nuns, have told you. So to really sit down and maybe even write down all the benefits of meditation can sort of reprogram your mind and to have this new attitude towards meditation. And so instead of seeking excuses to not meditate, your mind starts actually looking forward towards meditation, because it has all these benefits in mind. And sometimes I tell myself to get off my butt and get on my butt. What by that I mean, get off my excuses, like, but I should meditate, but I don't feel like it today, or I should meditate, but I've got something more important to do. I get off those butts and I get on my butt and just sit down and realize that meditation is something I want to do, and it is something important to me, and it is not just sitting down and wasting time. No, it's actually the most beautiful way to spend my time, because I learn about myself, I learn about life, and I can be, in my experience anyway, it's for others to judge, but I think I can be a better person also towards others. I can be kinder, and I can hopefully give better teachings. As I said, I'll leave that up for you to judge, but that's what I feel like anyway. You see, I'm already, when getting into that attitude of recollecting all the benefits of meditation. So sometimes all it takes is just a change of mind. Instead of thinking about all the buts, like, but it's too cold, but it's not the right day, but the neighbors are too noisy, but I got more important stuff. All these buts you can overcome by starting to reflect upon all the beautiful benefits of meditation. So that is maybe one attitude that some of you might sometimes have. You don't feel like meditation because there's more important things in life sometimes. That's what you feel like. So hopefully that's a thing you can use, maybe in the future. Another attitude that I've seen towards meditation is, people do it, but they turn it like into a chore sometimes, like something they have to do. Like, okay, every Tuesday at 7, it's Armadillo group, I have to come. It's just, I have to meditate. I don't know if you have that attitude, but maybe there are certain meditation groups where they say, okay, if you are in our group, you have to meditate every morning 1 hour, every evening 1 hour, and that is just what you have to do. Otherwise, you're not the real meditator, or whatever they say, I don't know. But sometimes we have this subtle, more subtle mindset inside of us where meditation is like something, like a task that we need to perform, something to check off our to-do list. And that makes it so much less pleasant to me anyway, because, you know, I'm a monk, so sometimes the way I relate to meditation is like, I'm a monk, I should meditate. I have to meditate because Ajahn Brahm says that Ajahn Brahm actually never says you have to meditate, because he is wise and he knows how to phrase his things. But I still, after Dhamma talk, sometimes I feel, Dhamma talk by Ajahn Brahm, sometimes I feel like, I should do better. I have to meditate now. And when I start meditating with that attitude, it is always quite unpleasant. And I'm not sure if I 100% know the reason why, but it's definitely to do with the fact that meditation should be like a leisure activity, ideally. I also have these periods where I just want to meditate because it's so nice. I don't even feel like eating lunch sometimes, which is the only meal that I usually have every day. But sometimes I don't feel like it because I just want to meditate instead. Or when I've been in the monastery and I go back to my hut, I almost feel like running to my hut so I can sit down and meditate. And when my mind is like that, then the meditation is much better. But when my mind is like, I have to do it, it's like a task. Then it doesn't work. So we have to turn meditation into something delightful, something that we look forward to. And instead of something that we have to do because we demand it of ourselves, or because your partner asks you to do it, or because society demands it, or whatever. That is not the right way to look upon meditation. It also turns it into something that you need to do, like a task that you tick off, like whatever, you're cleaning your house or whatever. It's the same like cleaning your mind or whatever in meditation. But as soon as you have that doing attitude, and also you start doing stuff in your meditation, you start trying to interfere with your mind, and you're not easily contented and satisfied as we just chanted. Instead, you are demanding of your mind because you already come into meditation with a demanding attitude of, I have to meditate now. It's my daily meditation time, so I have to meditate. If you start like that, then in your meditation, you'll also be like, I have to be peaceful. I have to be like this or that, in my experience anyway. And that's why that attitude also doesn't work. So that's two attitudes that I've seen in my life already that don't work. First of all, the avoiding attitude with the buts, and the second one, the attitude of having to meditate. So those are two that don't help. And then there is one last that I just reflected upon that I would like to mention before we start meditating, if you want to. You don't have to. Later, if you meditate, it's your choice. But there's one third attitude that I would like to mention, and that is maybe more specific to some people, but definitely for me. And I think we all have a little bit of this attitude inside of us, which is like a little bit of a perfectionist attitude towards meditation. Like, we want to get always the good meditations and not the so-called bad meditations. It's like meditation is only worthwhile doing if it is bringing us the best peace that we had. Sometimes I have this thing like, I'm in my hut and I know if I'm going to meditate with the way I feel now, it's not going to be a good meditation, or not the best anyway. That's what I feel like. And just because of that, then I sometimes feel like not meditating, because I have this idea that if I meditate, it should be a good meditation. Otherwise, it's like a waste of time or whatever. It has to be has to be perfect. That's a little bit of a perfectionist thing, which I sort of is my little, you call it a vice? Maybe not a vice, but my little thing that I have to learn about. And there's this story that I sometimes recall, which is there was a teacher of photography in America, and he taught always his students, of course, how to take pictures and all that things. And one day he decided an experiment with the class. So he split the class up in two parts, and part A and part B got different assignments, and they would be graded differently. So part A of the class, they would get the assignment just to take, to hand in at the end of the term one picture, and had made them the best picture they could, and they would be graded based on that picture. The other part of the class got the assignment to just hand in as many pictures as they could, and they would be graded by the amount of pictures. So part A would be graded by the quality, and part B by the quantity, by the amount. And of course, you might probably know where this is going. All the best pictures the teacher found were in class B. Not the people who had the assignment to hand in the best picture, but the people who had the assignment to just hand in as many pictures as they could. They would make the best pictures, actually. And this is, the teacher reflected that the people who were taught to hand in one perfect picture spent so much time thinking about how to make the perfect picture, so much time planning, that they did not actually have the develop the skills to actually take their good picture. Whereas the people who were just taught to hand in as many pictures as possible, they were more free, and they just took it as much more fun approach to taking pictures, and they actually, by that attitude, were able to take the better pictures. Now the same is true in meditation. If you always try to get the best meditation, then it doesn't work. Instead, just have fun with your meditation and experiment, like the group B of the pictures. They just had fun experimenting. They didn't demand a good picture. They just took pictures. That was all. And it's the same with meditation. Instead of demanding good meditation, just meditate. That's all. Doesn't need to be good or bad. We're just sitting here and being. So those were some reflections for you. I know it's probably a little bit different from usual when you get more direct meditation instructions in these kind of classes. But maybe for some of you, some of those reflections might be helpful. I hope. Because I know many of you already and have meditated many times before, so you already know what to do. But now, how do you relate to that, what you're doing? That's also important to consider. So three ways not to relate to your meditation is, what were they again? The first one, to avoid it with your butts. The second one is to make it a chore. And the third one is to expect it to always to be good. But perfectionism. And if you avoid those attitudes, then your meditation also will become much more easier, I promise. So, if any of you, after that, feel like meditating, not because you have to, and just because you feel like it, then we can do that now. So, I will ring the bell first, and then we can all together start meditating. And I will do a little bit of a guided meditation as well for half an hour. So when we sit down to meditate, especially if the talk before wasn't specifically about how to meditate, it may be good to take a moment to arrive where we are. By that I mean to realize that we are sitting right here, right now, with the purpose to just find some peace. Or the purpose to just sit here and do nothing. And this won't be the time, the next half hour won't be the time to reflect upon your life or your work or the future or the past. We let that all go. Now is the time to just be here. To experience life the way it presents itself to us right now. As always, a subtle energy in the mind that wants to get away from the present moment in the beginning of the meditation, whether through aversion or desire for aversion towards the present or desire for the future. But we say no to those attitudes. And instead, come to the present moment with acceptance and kindness. Whatever life brings to us right now. And a good way to start is to listen to the sounds that are going on around you. It's raining right now here in Perth, probably also in Armadale or in Serpentine, and I hear all the sound of the rain. Sound is always in the present moment. You cannot hear future or past. So if you have problems settling in the present, sound is always a good object. And once you've sort of settled into the present moment, arrived in the meditation, you can, if you want, try to relax your body. Just letting all the tension flow out. Dissolve all the tension into the air around you. If you have particularly painful places or tense places in your body, it might be useful to just leave them for the last to relax. Because if you start with them, sometimes it's too difficult. And you have an attitude of ill will towards it. So maybe start relaxing your body where it's already relaxed. Try to relax those parts even more. I will now be quiet for 20 minutes. You can keep relaxing your body, or if you so desire, whenever it feels right, apply your own meditation techniques. And after 20 minutes, I will guide us out of the meditation. Dear friends, we're coming to the end of this meditation session. Please take a moment to experience how you feel right now. Do you feel better now, more at ease? Is your body and is your mind more relaxed than at the start of the meditation? If so, then please remember this in case in future you feel like procrastinating on your meditation. Remember what beautiful effects it can bring. Because you are experiencing them right now. If, however, your meditation was a bit more uncomfortable today and you still feel uncomfortable, then remember, it's still good enough. Not every meditation can be perfect. And just appreciate the effort that you put in to come here, to sit down. So you always end each meditation with a positive attitude towards yourself and meditation as well. Regardless of whether it was pleasant or not. Thank you, everybody, for meditating with me today. And at the start of today's meeting, Chris asked, would you like to give a talk today? And I said no. But during the talk, actually, I got inspired by my own words and I really felt like talking. So maybe I went on for a bit too long. I don't know. But sometimes it can be the same with meditation. You don't feel like it at the beginning, but just go for it and sit down anyway. And often you'll find that meditation is pleasant regardless, and you'll get into it as you go. So I'd like to leave you with those reflections for now.
So, Venerable, would you like to continue with your talk or would you like some questions?
Yes, I think now is the time for questions, if there are any. If not, we can do something else.
Okay. Has anybody got a question they'd like to ask? You're welcome to unmute yourself or you're welcome to put a new message in the chat. I see we've got one message coming up. No questions in the chat yet. Is there anybody who would like to ask a question?
I'll ask that question.
Lovely, Gloria. Thank you. Welcome in this evening.
So, I think like meditation for me is a journey of understanding my own emotions. And then it's interesting that I discover a lot of emotions that I don't know even exist before meditation.
Right.
And then, yes, one of the emotions that come up recently is anger. Because I growing up, I was not allowed to feel angry, whatever. because I would not say, I think I kind of like get punished for being angry, and there's a lot of like other things associated with, like negative association with anger as well. And then I become like, I don't know how to get angry. Until recently, I still feel like I am not a person who will get angry easily. But like recently, I really experienced that intense anger in my, I think I suppress them a lot, and then they come up during meditation. And then I will have this very intense anger. And I think other than that is that I do not feel that much guilty about being angry compared to like in the past. And then I feel a lot of anger. And I kind of also see why the Buddha says that like anger is one of the three poison. Because when I'm angry, I will see like black and white. Like either that person is wrong, or like I'm not good enough, or that person treat me like badly.
Okay.
And then I will sort of feel guilty after being angry.
And your question?
Yes, my question is that how to handle. I think anger is like sort of healthy emotions. I think sort of healthy and normal emotions, and I want to experience it without like being always overwhelmed.
Okay, I think I sort of know what you're asking. If not, maybe I get it wrong, but you can ask again later. But first of all, I recognize what you were saying, that in meditation it's like a journey of discovering emotions. And that was the same for me when I started meditating like many years ago. I was like starting to unravel all these layers of emotions. Like I thought many things that seemed so complex, I started like unraveling and started seeing deeper layers and learning about myself and the way I felt and also what gives rise to certain emotions. So that's definitely very relatable. So that's good actually, that you are experiencing this journey and that you are discovering new emotions through meditation. Sometimes it's not that the emotions are new per se, but it's just that in meditation we recognize them more clearly because we actually sit down to be with our minds and sit down to experience our minds directly. Like when you're just walking in the street and going to a shop, you're busy walking and looking for directions and shopping. You might be just as angry inside, but you just don't notice because you're not paying attention. And when you're meditating, you might really think, oh, I'm suddenly so angry while meditating. How can it be? But it's not like that, Gloria, because you were already had that anger in you before, but you just didn't notice. Often when people start meditating, they say, I'm thinking so much when I'm meditating. But the truth is that they've always been thinking that much, so they just didn't realize. And so it's the same with your anger. It's not caused by meditation. It was there all along. It's just that now you're more aware of it. And this is a good thing, to be more aware of it, because then you can actually learn what it's like. And when you said some conflicting things. One, that you understand why the Buddha called it a poison, but you also said that it can be useful. But poison is never useful, right? Poison is something bad. And the more you will meditate and experience anger, but also experience more kindness, which is the opposite of anger, you will learn that anger is not nice. It doesn't feel good. It actually hurts you. Whereas kindness, which is basically the absence of anger, is really nice. So anger is the poison, but kindness is like the sweet, juicy drink that has no ill side effects. So really try to develop that loving kindness as well, and then you will actually feel less angry throughout your life, and also it will be less of an issue in meditation as well. Maybe actually more often specifically do metta meditation if you have done that before. I do it a lot myself as well. It's one of my main meditation methods, actually. Maybe the meditation method that I do the most. Like a month or two ago, I gave a whole it was only a weekend, but the whole weekend I only talked during a meditation retreat about loving kindness. That was all about, because it's so important to me, and it's not an inferior method of meditation or anything. So I really recommend you try more of that. That is probably the best way to go in your situation. Thank you for that question.
Thank you too, Venerable. And Venerable, we have a question in the chat. Would you be okay if I read it to you?
Please do.
What do you do when you haven't found joy in meditation and you feel not so motivated to meditate? How did Venerable experience his first or second year of meditation? Can you kindly guide this?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was lucky enough to find benefits in meditation right away. And maybe the benefits weren't specifically joy, but at least I found some peace and understanding. Gloria just said that it was for her like a journey through emotions. And I said that what I experienced as well. And one of the things that I really liked about meditation when I first started is that journey of learning about myself. I always like to learn how things work, you know? And I was an engineer student as a layperson, student in engineering, because I like to know how do all those machines work and how does physics work. And I applied the same attitude to meditation once I started realizing that you can actually learn about how the mind works. That was really fascinating to me, because that is not something you get classes in at school. I think they should actually give you classes in understanding yourself in school instead of just mathematics and stuff, because it's such a useful thing in life. You learn to understand yourself, the way you tick, and what triggers you and what makes you calm and all that kind of things. So maybe instead of looking for joy, look for understanding instead. And actually we often in our tradition and sort of influenced by Ajahn Brahm, we often talk about the joy and happiness from meditation. These are important, but the actual goal of the Buddha was understanding, wisdom, to understand life and the functioning of the mind. And actually one time I even asked Ajahn Brahm a similar question, like, yeah, you always talk about peace, but I'm not inspired by peace at the moment during this range retreat. There was an interview I had with Ajahn Brahm during the range retreat. So I asked him, I'm not inspired by peace. What do I do? I feel a bit lost. Then he said, focus on the insights instead, the insight aspect of meditation. So maybe that's something for you to reflect upon. It's not always about joy and peace. You'll find them eventually, but insights into yourself are actually, in a way, more worthwhile than peace, in a way, because they are like the ultimate aim, in a way, of the Buddha's path. Not joy, but insights. Yeah. I hope I'm making some sense. I'm a little bit rambling here, but I hope that answers your question anyway.
Thank you, Venerable. Christelle, would you like to unmute and ask your question? Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you, Venerable. I've got a question about meditation. For me, I've noticed what works best is metta meditation. I found breath meditation doesn't do much, but metta meditations, I can get very strong feelings. And sometimes it's extremely nice, and sometimes I have this very strong feeling in my heart, but that it feels like almost painful, but it's getting stronger and stronger. And then sometimes I'm thinking, oh my God, am I going to have a heart attack? And also sometimes it goes down my arm. I feel like the feeling going down my arm. So I don't know whether... I know Ajahn Brahm said nothing wrong can happen to you in meditation. So I try to reassure myself like that. But I wanted to know whether you have any idea, because when that happens too, it gets too strong, then I get a bit scared. Thank you.
Okay, that's a nice question. Something different from usual questions, but relatable also, because I actually recognize that as well, Krista. And I don't have it going into my arm, but sometimes the feeling of loving kindness feels like too much in a way. And it feels like it's almost like too physical, let me put it that way. And one thing you can do is try to make it less about the physical part of the feeling and more about the mental attitude and the mental aspect of it. Focus more on that. Because you feel loving kindness in your body, but you also feel it in your mind as well. And if you move more towards the mind and let go of the body, then you can start to feel loving kindness also in a more pure way. And you'll also be less worried about the body, and those bodily feelings will also tend to move to the background. And so that's my first advice and main advice that I would give you. Focus on the mental aspect of it more. See if you can do that somehow. Second of all, maybe let it come more naturally as well. I don't know how you practice metta meditation, but sometimes it can become a bit too much forced somehow, or too much tension applied. In a way, I don't know if that makes any sense to you. And so try to trust in the feeling of metta, that it will stay with you without you having to actively maintain it or give rise to it. That just sit back and let it come to you, instead of you always putting fuel on the fire, as it were, the fire of metta. Just let the fire burn by itself and you just be an observer of that feeling. And then it will actually sometimes be more overwhelming in a way, because it will become even stronger. But not in that hurtful, like semi-painful kind of way that you're describing, but more like overwhelming in a mental kind of way, but in a beautiful way as well. As often when you get some of the breakthroughs in metta meditation, when you have that kind of change in attitude towards it, and it becomes bigger than you. Instead of you being the one who controls the metta, and it's more like the metta takes control over you. And that is a difficult step to make, but once you do that, you will change forever as a person. And maybe that is what is holding you back. So those are two tips. Focus on the mental aspect and also just let it come to you naturally. Yeah. There's two things in my practice anyway that have helped me when I am in that situation or similar situation.
Thank you, Venerable.
Yeah, do you think that might help? Sometimes people ask questions and I'm not sure.
Yes, it does help, yeah. Because okay. It's true that sometimes, because I want to experience that nice feeling of metta, then I keep on repeating may, let's say, I take one of my son's name, may Victor be happy, or may Louis be happy.
And then,
or may someone I admire be happy, like Ajahn Brahmani, for example. And then it can go quite strong. Maybe instead of pushing that, I just wait and see what happens. Thank you very much.
Exactly, yes. Yes, it's like Ajahn Brahm compares metta meditation. He often uses the phrase opening the door of your heart. And when you open the door of your heart, you open the door, it's like opening the door of your house to allow everybody to come in. If you open the door of your house, you allow your friends to come in. There's a kindness to open the door for your friend. But you don't force your friends into your house, that's not being kind. So it's the same with metta. If you have metta, real metta, then you just allow it to be and you don't demand it to be. Yeah. Thank you for that question.
Thank you, Venerable Tu. In answer to your question before, does it help? Yes, what you are teaching does help, and what all the monks teach does help. I've had two experiences over the last 2 weeks of young male students getting very angry with me. And instead of responding, I've just simply replied with metta and loving kindness. And the whole situation has changed from anger into gentleness on their behalf. So yes, it does help. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Yes, it has. It's been a very beautiful experience for me. Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to ask a question? Dai, I thought maybe you might like to ask a question. If you would like to, you're welcome to unmute. Is there anybody else?
I'll make a comment.
Oh, thank you. Yes, please, Lisa.
So, Venerable Senior, thank you so much. It's very nice to be able to tell you how much I've appreciated your teachings. Your metta meditation retreat was very helpful in your story with Spot, the cat. And it was very helpful, that metta meditation retreat. I really appreciated that. And today what you said, I thought that was really nice, because it's helpful to try to learn how to talk to oneself. And I think reflecting on meditation and the benefits of it is a great way to do that. And I have a question, though, with that, when reflecting on things like that. Then my mind goes off, and sort of bringing it back to that reflection, those benefits, having that, because doing that, reflecting on the benefits of meditation, I would think, if you could answer this for me, it would be right effort, I believe.
Yes, maybe. Yes.
And so, and having, I think it's called Hiri Otapa, sustained effort, because it keeps going off. So if you could maybe have any suggestions about, you know, when you're having like a nice reflection and all of a sudden you're somewhere else with it.
Right.
Bringing it back. Thank you.
Yeah, so the Buddha taught not only meditation, not only mindfulness and samadhi, but also other factors of the path. And one of them is often translated as right intention, or also right thought. That's the second factor. So it is important to also reflect upon the way we think about life, but as I told you today, to reflect upon how we think about meditation. Because the Buddhist path is about changing our whole person also, our thoughts, our actions, and our minds. And so one thing to do is to, if you feel this kind of reflection can be of benefit, is to set a specific period for it outside of meditation. So don't blend the two together, like reflecting upon meditation, don't do it while you are meditating, because then the borders between the two become a bit blurry, and instead of meditating, you're just thinking. So that is one thing that I would like to say about that. Sorry, what was it? What was actually your question, actually? Well, can you repeat it one more time?
About sustained effort, developing sustained effort in reflecting
right.
on those benefits.
Yeah, so yes, right effort is also one of the factors of the path, and one of the parts of right effort is explained as developing the desire or enthusiasm to develop wholesome mind states. That is actually in the very definition of right effort, developing the desire to meditate, basically. So what I told you before, the meditation is not something the Buddha would disapprove of. It's actually part of the right effort as well, to develop the desire to meditate. And you do this by reflecting upon it. But if you feel it difficult to sustain that, maybe it's because you're not really getting benefits out of it, and it's maybe not the right time to do it. Because usually when something is the right time to do and we get benefits out of it, it's quite easy to keep doing it. So maybe it's just not the right time to do it. And also another thing might be that your mind might just be too restless in general before you do these reflections. So what you might do is maybe meditate first and then do the reflections afterwards. At the end of the meditation, I did like a 1 minute reflection of how do you feel now, and have you found any peace? But you can extend that reflection to be longer as well. And you'll find, Alyssa, that it's usually much easier to do that kind of reflection after the meditation instead of before, or instead of just in the middle of the day when you're running around doing all sorts of stuff. So that would be my advice as well. It goes for much of the things. If we need to think about something, it's actually often helpful to meditate first and not think about it, and then only afterwards, when your mind is more clear and focused, then figure out the things that you need to think about. Yeah. Hope that helps, Alyssa.
I'm sure it does. Thank you, Alyssa. Sky, would you like to unmute?
Yeah, just a quick thing that came in my mind. I just happened to see a video this week, some lady neurologist, and she made a simple diagram of the brain, and she said the right side of the brain is the one that tells you to stay in bed and don't exercise and don't meditate and don't do this.
Right.
And the left side of the brain tells you, I will do this, I need to do this, I want to do this. And then she mentioned briefly, I didn't watch the whole video, but it caught my eye. She said the middle part of the brain is the one that has your goals. So if we know in our hearts that the meditation has all these benefits, then hopefully our middle brain, or whatever part of it is, grief, I don't know, they have names, will help guide us to remember that these are just hindrances that are associated with an actual brain activity, that we're not always just guilty in our hearts that we don't want to meditate, but our brain is actually messing with us, you know, like, trying to keep us from being all that we can be. So I just like to reflect on that, because I don't want to beat myself up when I don't want to meditate. I just want to realize there is a battle up here. And, you know, but like Christelle said, when you have a metta in your heart, you know the benefits. Yeah, you can usually override after some years of battling with that brain to say, oh, you know, I'm just going to give it a shot. And I love what you said about not being a perfectionist, you know, because sometimes we have doubt that we're doing it right. And but I just want to say that was a great talk, Venerable Sunyo. I really loved it. And you really hit it nicely on all the three topics of what gets in our way. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Sky. That's a nice comment and very helpful as well, actually. The thing about the brain. I'm not sure if the left versus right thing, I think that's a little bit of outdated science, but and maybe a little bit oversimplistic, left versus right. But generally, it's sometimes helpful to reflect upon it in that way. Like, it's outside of our control and it is just processes of the brain and the mind that's going on. And we are sort of the passenger of those sometimes. And that's a helpful way to reflect upon it. And I will also use that as well. So thank you for that comment. You're muted, Chris.
Yes, I am.
I see your mouth.
Yes, I do that often, Venerable. Venerable, would you like to leave us with a blessing this evening?
I definitely would love to do that.
Thank you very much, Venerable.
Thank you, everybody, for joining meditation. And the biggest blessing is not what I'm going to give you, but the blessing you've already given yourself by sitting down and finding peace. And you've also given me a blessing by giving me the opportunity to share some of my thoughts and random ramblings. And I hope some of them were helpful, but just pick what you like, basically. And now I will give a more traditional blessing. Natthi me saranam anyam, buddho me saranam varam, etena saccha vajjena, sotite hotu sabbada. Natthi me saranam anyam, dhammo me saranam varam, etena saccha vajjena, sotite hotu sabbada. Natthi me saranam anyam, Sangho me saranam varam, etena saccha vajjena, sotite hotu sabbada. Thank you. See you next time.